welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews with authors and artists on books, movies, DVDs, collectibles, pretty much anything to do with the national pastime. If it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. Ray Chapman remains the only major leaguer to die from injuries sustained during a game, the result of being hit in the head by a pitch from Carl Mays during a Red Sox-Indians contest on August 17, 1920. Mike Sowell told the story in The Pitch That Killed, published in 1989. It won the Casey Award from Spitball magazine and was cited by the New York Times as a notable book of the year. Well, now Molly Lawless, an illustrator, comic artist, and avid doodler, as she describes herself on her blog, has released Hit by Pitch, Ray Chapman, Carl Mays, and the Fatal Fastball, published last year by McFarland. In her first full-length graphic book, she shows her love for the period as she expounds on the tragic tale of what can be simplistically described as good versus evil. Chapman was a beloved figure, and Mays was, well, not. I had a chance to speak with Molly Lawless recently to talk about her new book.
Molly Lawless, welcome to the bookshelf.
Ron, thanks so much for having me.
So this hit-by-pitch, Ray Chapman, Carl Mays, and the Fatal Fastball, is a little departure from the kind of books that we're used to seeing from McFarlane, which is a very scholarly publishing house that puts out some very eclectic baseball books. How did you learn about the Mays and Chapman incident?
Well, I was a huge baseball fan growing up, and so much so that the regular season wasn't enough to fill my need for baseball information and knowledge. So I became kind of, you know, around age 9 or so, I started reading about baseball history, and I kind of, you know, found myself poring over these baseball encyclopedias, and that was part of the first time I saw a mention of the incident. So I knew that somebody had died from an injury sustained during a game in 1920, and you know, it always kind of stuck in my head as one of these, you know, unimaginable for a child, thinking about, you're my heroes playing on the field if one of them died. Like, that just seemed unimaginable to me. So it's always one of those stories that stuck with me. And, you know, fast forward to, you know, 5 years ago or so, I started reading about baseball history more. I'd kind of taken some time off of it. And I had been doing these great moments in baseball comics, so I was reading The Glory of Their Times, things like that, to kind of get some ideas for these true-life kind of one-page baseball comics I was doing. And I came upon the story again, mention of the story in The Glory of Their Times, the Lawrence Ritter oral history book, and that was when I sort of was led to The Pitch That Killed, the Mike Sowell exhaustive account of the Mays and Chapman incident. And I kind of didn't realize what a great story it was. I mean, I knew it's one of these indelible moments in baseball history. Really a trivia sort of question at this point to people. Some people have never even heard of it. But that book just, you know, blew my mind. Honestly, it was just all the players that were involved, all the supporting characters, these great stars that were all there, people like Tris Speaker and Babe Ruth and, you know, other trivia footnotes like Wally Pipp, and, you know, they're all, you know, supporting cast in this one moment in baseball history that I just thought was just an incredible story.
And the way you describe it, I'm surprised no one's ever thought to make this into a feature film.
You know, I people say that a lot when I kind of, when I bore them with the story and go over it, they say, you know, and then the fact that, spoiler alert, the Cleveland Indians won the World Series that year just makes it like, it's a no-brainer. This is a sports movie, you know, it really is.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned as a younger person and in more recent years, you were interested in baseball history. You mentioned Lawrence Ritter. Do you have any other favorite writers that you like to go to?
You know, Lawrence Ritter, that was the one that really kind of got me back into that world again. I love the Fred Lieb book, Baseball as I've Known It. He features quite a bit in my book as well, just his take on the events and his, you know, his side of it. Gosh, I also read Timothy Gay's Tris Speaker biography. Was really I really enjoyed that as well. I thought that was a great story as well.
So you seem to be fascinated by that particular time period.
Yeah, and that time period sort of, you know, funny how things cement when you're a child. Like I just that was sort of what I latched on to when I first started reading about baseball history. I was really interested in Babe Ruth, and I sort of like worked back from there, from the 27 Yankees back to around 1900. And I'm not sure what it is about that era that sort of clicked with me, but I just always found it fascinating.
Now, why did you decide to produce your book in this particular manner?
In the graphic manner, or well, that's, you know, as an illustrator and a comic artist, there's really no other way for me to tell it. And I also thought it was, you know, I think I mentioned this in my introduction that I don't consider myself a great scholar, you know, research, you know, pro or anything like that. Other people have done incredible work telling this story in other ways and other formats. And since the only thing I think I can really add to it, and my best way to bring this story to people, is by illustrating it. So that's kind of what I have to work with. It's the only way I really feel like I could add something to the story.
Well, certainly by doing it this way, you're reaching out to a different kind of audience that might not be interested in reading through a long narrative.
Right, right. And that's, you know, I found when I have told people while I've been working on this, the story, that's, if you tell them in that kind of quick encapsulation, this is what the story is about, here's what happens, you know, they're really interested. And I hope that translates to, yeah, exactly like you said, someone who wouldn't pick up, you know, a baseball encyclopedia or, you know, a baseball history book, but would kind of, you know, I know this is a very quick read, they would go through this cartoon account of these events and these characters' histories.
Now, what kind of research did you do for the artwork? How did you pick the clothing styles, the baseball uniforms, the various background things? What did you use for your models?
I used a let's see. Well, the one page on the web that I went back to over and over again was the Dress to the Nines exhibit. Mm-hmm. That's the Hall of Fame has, where you can put in any year, any team, and just get their full uniform. I mean, I had uniforms from all these different years from that era just like tacked above my desk. Just, you know, so I made sure I got, if I'm, you know, talking about Carl Mays in 1916, I want to have him in the right uniform. And they did change, you know, little bits each year. So that was very helpful. As far as, you know, just a lot of, I had a book on the old polo grounds, so that kind of gives you an idea of what people in the stands were wearing. And, you know, you kind of go down a rabbit hole with a lot of this stuff. You want the detail to be right, but you want to just, you know, there are certain things you just need to say, okay, I gotta let this go and just decide that this woman is wearing the right hat and not get too crazy about it. But, so a lot of the visual research was just, you know, kind of looking through these old baseball books that I have and the pictures of the players, what they were wearing on and off the field. Just kind of, all I was really hoping for was to make it feel not wrong. I wanted it to be accurate and just read as cohesive and coherent as you'd believe this could be 1920 or 1915 or et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And what part did you find came more easily for you, the writing of the narrative or the drawing?
Well, I had never written or illustrated anything of this length before, so it was definitely a challenging project from the start. But the writing, I feel more comfortable drawing than writing. At the same time, the script that I would actually write would be so much shorter than the finished product of the artwork. And of course, the artwork takes much longer than, you know, the writing that goes alongside it, for me anyway, because this was all in pen and ink by hand. So it was, you know, definitely, just certain parts went faster than others, but it was definitely a long process. So I would say definitely the artwork.
And how long did this take you from conception to the time you gave it to McFarlane?
Let's see, I guess maybe almost 3 years. I Yeah, there were definitely, I mean, I was working on other things at the same time, but this, you know, this is my, yeah, definitely a long time to be working on a book that, but, you know, it's my first one, and, you know, I kind of, as I kept telling myself, it'll take as long as it will take, and, yeah, but it was amazing.
Did you seek other publishers before you went to McFarland? Because, like I said before, it seems like a departure from their usual scholarly narratives.
Right, it, they were interested in starting up a graphic novel line, or, you know, graphic nonfiction in this case. I mean, probably in all their cases, it'll be graphic nonfiction. And they contacted me because they had seen my, you know, I think that I happened to fall into this niche that, or niche that they really, you know, this, I was doing Deadball comics. I mean, they saw one that I had in a Saber newsletter. And so they contacted me to see if I was interested in something longer form, and I pitched them a couple of ideas, and this was one of them.
And what, may I ask what some of those other ideas were?
Well, one of them was a just a book of these one-page sort of, I mean, I had been focusing mainly on the Deadball era, but of the series I was calling Great Moments in Baseball that were sort of, you know, just, you know, kind of going through, for example, there's I have a two-part about Fred Merkel and Fred Snodgrass called A Tale of Two Freds. It just tells the story of, in one page for each, the story of their kind of goat-making, as it were. And so, you know, so I've kind of, I had several of these that they had seen, and one of my ideas was to do a whole book of them, which may, will hopefully still happen. So, but that was my other, I believe that was my other most, the other idea they were considering, but, this was the one we ended up going with.
Now, are these baseball comics that you mentioned available for people to see at some place?
You know, I have a few of them on my website, mollylawless.com. I also have a book of a compilation of my previous comics, comics that I had self-published at, you know, different comic conventions and different events like that. And they are all available in that. And that compilation is available on my website. There's a place you can click on the upper right, I believe, through Lulu, which is a self-publisher, and it's called In Fandom. That's the name of the collection. So within that, there are these Deadball era, well, mostly Deadball era comics that I had done.
Now that you've completed your first graphic, I'm sorry, what do you call it? It's not a novel, nonfiction. Do you anticipate another one in the near future?
I do. I mean, I would probably be working on that, the Great Moments in Baseball book first. So that would just be a huge collection of true baseball stories, probably from all different eras. And so that would probably be my next long form. I mean, I've thought about different other ideas, but nothing is truly in the works yet. I think that will probably be the next project.
Hi, we've been talking with Molly Lawless, writer and illustrator of Hit by Pitch, Ray Chapman, Carl Mays, and The Fatal Fastball. Molly, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Ron.
And that was the Bookshelf Conversation with Molly Lawless. For more information on the book, visit her blog, Hooray for Mollywood, located at mollylawless.com. And that wraps up another podcast edition of The Bookshelf. Thanks for listening. Come back next week when our guest will be Tim Wendel, author of Summer of 68, the season that changed baseball and America forever. And remember, visit us at ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf.com for the latest news, reviews, and previews, as well as announcement of author appearances. We love your questions and comments, so please drop an email to ron@ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf.com. So long, everybody.
Here it comes.